The Education Gadfly Show starts now.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, a man who thought pages went out of style in the 14th century, Rick Hess. Welcome, Rick.
What the hell did that mean exactly?
Well, have you been following all the news of scandal here in the nation's capital?
Oh, those pages. I was thinking like book pages.
Oh, no. I guess book pages actually came in style around the 14th century.
Well, do you see the GOP now wants to get rid of pages so that they're not, you know, I guess, hit with so much temptation?
I think that's really the best solution. Other big news, of course, Bob Woodward coming out with a new book, State of Denial. I personally thought that was about people who were opposing national standards and testing. Huh. Ba-doom. Uh-huh. Okay. That, you know, people write this stuff for me, Rick. I want you to know. But anyways, you know, what do you think about all this stuff going on here in Washington? Does it make you think that this is just a cesspool? We should all leave the city and go to the hinterlands?
Well, we knew that before. I mean, this is, although I did see the not widely discussed attribution of Woodward's book, which suggests that Rumsfeld was deeply involved with reading first.
Ah, interesting. I hadn't seen that angle.
That had not previously surfaced.
This all is now beginning to make sense. Well, if you have something to say about the various political picadillos that we're dealing with, shoot us a line at letters@excellence.net. We would love to hear from you. We've got a big show lined up for us today, Rick, so let's get going. We're going to start with a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we've got an interview with a principal from Texas who paddles his students.
Nice.
Yes. And finally, our in-house weirdo, Liam, will serve up a dose of education news of the weird. All right, Jen, why don't you kick off Pardon the Gadfly, where we debate three topics for 90 seconds each.
Okay, topic one. Texas recently instituted the largest merit pay program in the nation. But in this, the first year, some schools are refusing the money. In one such school, Bel Air Elementary, only 2 of 47 teachers voted to accept the merit pay dollars. Bel Air's principal says that paying certain teachers more than others will upset her school's carefully crafted team spirit. Mike, is turning down the free money a virtuous move, or is it simply a cop-out masquerading as principal?
Well, you have to wonder if the two teachers that voted in favor of the merit pay were probably the best teachers in the school who knew they had some money coming to them. This is really disappointing. Look, we've got a culture in education that doesn't think that merit pay or rewarding people for their performance is a good idea. I guess it's going to take more than just changing laws and instituting policies to change that culture.
I mean, first, these people do have a gripe. Apparently, the way they talked about it made them look pretty silly. But the fact is, it's not a particularly brilliantly designed merit pay system.
So why not? What's wrong with it?
What's wrong with it?
Yeah.
That it's hinged on level-based performance.
Okay.
This, you know, rewarding doctors who go to high-poverty neighborhoods based on total birth weight is probably not the best way to subtly or thoughtfully, recognize effective clinics. But then the other issue is, look, I think we're talking about 24 schools out of something like 4,000 or 5,000 schools in Texas. Well, you know, it's a free country. They're free to pass on the money and it'll go elsewhere. And, you know, I would suspect that highly effective teachers at these schools are probably going to want to move to schools where they're going to be recognized and rewarded.
All right, that's fair. Now, so the program, the way it works then is what? The schools that do well on the Texas exam get this extra money.
If they're high-poverty schools.
If they're high-poverty schools. All right.
And then they get to divvy the money up as they see fit.
Right. Very good. But Rick, you know, I mean, good schools around the country forever, good private schools have figured out how to do this.
Actually, private schools are almost incredibly unexperimental about teacher pay.
Are you sure about that?
Absolutely. There's good data on this out of NCES.
Huh. All right.
Okay, topic two. Rick, Pinellas County, Florida, which includes the pristine city of St. Petersburg.
I thought that was in Russia.
Has long assigned its students to schools based on race ratio. That is, black students could be no more than 42% of a given school's population. This year, however, the 35-year-old law expires, and parents can choose where to send their children regardless of racial makeups. Initial polling shows that most parents want their kids to attend school close to home, which means that de facto resegregation is likely. Is this worrisome? Does it matter?
To the extent that we think schools should have kids of different races together, yeah, it's a little bit worrisome. It's not surprising. Survey has always shown that the parents tend to choose schools close to home, which is in any kind of, you know, vaguely segregated community is going to lead to segregation. And polls show that, you know, and research shows that white parents, for instance, would rather send their kids to majority white schools for the most part. Fact is that this is just the way the world works. There is one consideration, which is that when you have well-designed choice systems, for instance, systems, voucher programs that let black kids go to mostly white private schools, choice will actually work to desegregate the community. And of course, private schools, because they're smaller and don't have tracking, actually tend to be more integrated within the school. But the fact is, you know, this is worrisome for those folks who are worried about segregation.
Rick, I find it hard to disagree with any of that. I will only add that, you know, the Supreme Court case that's going to be heard, I think, in coming weeks is going to have an impact on programs like this around the country. Of course, this is the case looking at whether or not in Louisville or in Seattle they went over the line in using race as a factor in admissions to schools, especially if there was a tie in some kind of lottery system. So if the Supreme Court comes out and says, look, no longer can districts do this, then this will be the wave of the future.
Well, and it's worrisome, but it's also worrisome to have us assigning kids based on the color of their skin. So it's not, you know, so is it a worry? Sure. But it's also a problem to get into racial bean counting.
You know what I'm worried about is that Liam is having Jen cut us off before our 90 seconds is up.
Really? Liam,
I tell
Liam,
you.
Fess up.
And I want to tell you, he rolled his eyes at your St. Petersburg joke also.
Why did we call out St. Petersburg, by the way?
Because this is where it's happening.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Liam might be from there.
Liam, are you from St. Petersburg?
What people don't realize is that Liam's mom writes most of the Education Gadfly these days.
Oh,
and she does
that's
a heck
so
of
precious.
A job with it. Yeah.
Nicely done.
All right, Jen, what's the last one?
All right, final topic. Actually, according to Liam in this week's Gadfly, colleges focus too much energy on becoming pioneers of social progress and not enough energy on teaching their students. Exhibit A being the media love fest that followed Harvard's scrapping of its early admissions policy. Everyone knows that ivory towers are divorced from reality, but very few people seem to want to change the situation. Why does higher ed obsess about fighting culture wars instead of worrying about educating kids?
I think that's an excellent question. You know, when Harvard came out with this decision not to do early admissions, there's lots of reasons to make that decision. But what it really mostly talked about was that would help poor and minority kids who were less likely to apply early, and therefore it would make it more likely that Harvard would have a diverse student body. Now, that's fine. We just talked about diversity in K-12. But it seems like higher ed is obsessed with these culture war issues. For example, making sure that Army recruiters can't come on law school campuses, you know, or whether or not a member of the Taliban should be allowed to enroll in an Ivy League school. I mean, all of the brouhaha is around those kinds of issues, and there's very little discussion about whether or not kids are actually learning anything once they go to college.
Yeah, I mean, there's very little conversation about what the kids are learning, but I mean, I'm not sure we can blame this on higher ed institutions. The folks who made a big fuss out of the Harvard decision weren't Harvard. It was the media, and it was the chattering classes, and it was the folks who were trying to read a lot of tea leaves here. Fact is, Harvard can get away with scrapping this because it, you know, has tons of people who want to go there. And frankly, Harvard has been getting a lot of pressure to try to make sure that its classes are more diverse. So you can hear the same language from the president and from the Secretary of Education when they explain why NCLB is a good thing. They keep telling us that we need to make sure that all classes and all races are represented in all areas of American life. So for Harvard to go ahead and do this and then get beat up on for being social engineers seems, you know, it seems a little excessive in this one.
Rick, you seem a little defensive on Harvard's behalf.
I got to protect Harvard, baby.
Rick, where did you get your PhD?
Ah, buzzerang.
Oh, very good. Conflict of interest, raise your ugly head once again, Rick. Harvard man over there.
Hey, there's a new magazine called 02138.
Yes.
Do you know what 02138 is?
It is the zip code for Harvard, yes.
Or for Cambridge.
For Cambridge. Ah, you fancy pants, Ivy League types. I don't know what I think about.
Where'd you get your PhD again, Mike?
I'm a man of the people, Rick. A man of the people.
A former bureaucrat of the people.
That's right. Well, speaking of a man of the people, we have an interview with a man of the people this week. We've got an interview with a principal from Texas about corporal punishment. Let's take a listen. We're here today with Anthony Price, who is the principal at Everman Junior High School in Everman, Texas. Mr. Price, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Thank you.
Did I pronounce that right, Everman?
Everman is correct.
Everman, Texas. And where is that in Texas?
It's in the Metroplex, right outside Dallas-Fort Worth.
Okay, great. Well, Mr. Price, we came across you because we read a New York Times article over the weekend which talked about corporal punishment at your school. And we're interested in that. Of course, that is still a very hot topic in education today. It seems like fewer and fewer schools are still using corporal punishment. Tell us just a little bit. How does that work at your school?
Well, in our school, it's one of our one of the top rungs on the ladder. On that ladder, we have corporal punishment at the top rung. Corporal punishment, parent shadowing, night school, and suspension. So the parents get to select which consequence they would like their child to receive if they get to that level. Most of the parents within our city choose corporal punishment because it's quick and it's effective, and the students are back in class instead of staying a day at home, or instead of parents have to take off work and come up and follow their student around school all day, or the kid coming to night school after he gets out of school from 4 to 7, stay an additional 3 hours.
Okay, so you say it's at the top of your ladder. So does that mean that there are then lesser punishments that happen to students for infractions before they get to that point?
Oh, sure. First is a verbal warning. Then we have push-ups and paragraphs. Then we go to after-school detention and on-campus suspension. And then we go up to that ladder that has the 4 consequences.
Okay, that's great. So you make the kids do push-ups still, huh? That's probably good in the fight against childhood obesity also, huh?
Yes, it's good, and it's quick and effective right then and there. If they do a minor violation, let's say, drop down and give me 25, and they'll do those, and those work real well also.
Wow, 25, that's a lot. That's a lot. Well, tell me, Anthony, this article came out in the New York Times. What's the reaction been there to this article? Have you gotten a lot of complaints from parents or from other people in the community?
Not from our community. I have been getting some complaints from out of state, different states. I've even got a complaint from Israel. But within our community, I think because everyone is pretty much acceptance of what we have here. And so we do have some parents within our community. Within my school, I have students who parents do not prefer corporal punishment. But again, there are 4 items on that top rung of the ladder: corporal punishment, night school, parent shadowing, or suspension. So they simply just choose one of the other options.
So it's really a parental choice to do
yes, sir.
To do this. Okay.
Yes, it
now, it's interesting from Israel. You know, Israel, of course, known for some pretty tough interrogation techniques, against terrorists. And of course, we have a bigger debate going on in this country right now about how we should treat terrorist suspects and that sort of thing. I don't know, what kind of, do you think you're teaching any kind of lessons to students that are confusing about the use of violence? Or how do you come down on that?
I don't think so, because first thing we do is we make sure that the students as well as their parents trust and know us. Once they trust and know us, it's not a question of if we are harming or abusing their children. It's just a discipline technique. It's just one piece of the puzzle for school improvement.
Very interesting. Okay. Now, some people say, look, this kind of corporal punishment, it goes back way, way back in history. We could look all the way back to Hammurabi even, you look through certainly some of the tyrants in history, Mussolini and Franco. And what do you think? What do you say to people that they say, look, this is really out of line. This is almost like a dictator coming in and torturing little children. What do you say to them? Look, this works?
I simply tell them if that's one of the consequences that you are not, that you're opposed to, then simply don't choose it, or we simply don't use it for your child. But for the parents who request it, then we use it for those children.
Okay, very good. Well, we really appreciate you coming on the show. Principal Anthony Price, again, from Everman, Texas. Hope you will consider joining us again.
Sure.
Okay, thanks
so
much. So what do you think, Rick? Principal Price, I think, makes a pretty compelling argument for his brand of corporal punishment.
Wonder if they call him Spanky.
I do have to wonder that. What do you think, Rick? When you were a teacher, did you used to spank your students?
No, man. Although Baton Rouge was probably legal, and that actually never occurred to me to ask.
Right.
But
What I was most impressed with was that, much before you get to the paddling, students before that might have to drop and give you 25 push-ups. I mean, but these students, if they had some kind of infraction, had to go down and do push-ups. I mean, 25, that's a lot of push-ups.
It's although I got to say, my 65-year-old father, the guy at his gym who trains him, gave a new challenge. My 65-year-old dad was able to do 32 in a minute the other day.
Wow.
So I got to say, if we've got all these little chubby Frito-eating 16-year-olds and they're trouble 25 push-ups, it's probably a sign they need to eat a few fewer Fritos.
Yeah, well, I think this brings it all together. I mean, the way he described it, it was parental choice because it was only up to the parents.
Boom.
You know, it was good discipline, and it fights obesity all at the same time.
It makes it work.
I like it. I like it. Okay, well, it is
you
now
know who
time.
Else would have liked it, by the way?
Spanky?
Former Representative Mark Foley from
okay.
Florida.
Okay. We're not touching that one.
He would have written the 16-year-olds and saying, call me Spanky for the day.
All right. Speaking of weird and creepy, it is now time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's weird this week?
What's weird, Mike, is the goings-on in the Bremen High School District in suburban Chicago. Superintendent Richard Mitchell has come under fire there for a spoof video he made for a back-to-school staff seminar in which Mitchell spliced real answers to fake questions and portrayed some teachers as strippers, drug dealers, and murderers. Quote, "What were the results of the last drug test you took?" Mitchell asked one teacher in the mock interview. "It was positive," the teacher answers. Mitchell posted the video on the district's website and the controversy began. Quote, "I thought it was in poor taste when it was shown," said school board president Evelyn Gleason. "I personally think he stepped over the line when it went on the website." This past Tuesday, the school board voted to suspend Mitchell with pay pending a dismissal hearing. After the vote, Mitchell rose, left his board seat next to Gleason, and sat among the 300-person crowd watching the hearing. Quote, "I will take my place with the community," he said. Mitchell also plans to sue the school district because he is gay, although sources are unclear about the specific discrimination he alleges. This situation promises to grow only weirder.
Dude, now that was weird. I want to know what the actual question was, though, that the teacher answered it was positive. Why was a teacher filmed saying it was positive? That's just a strange thing to say.
Well, like, how was your experience with your school children?
Oh! Okay. That would make more sense. I was thinking maybe it was a, maybe it was a bicyclist.
You know, I think we could pretty easily splice together our own little mock video here in the podcast, Rick, and make you look pretty bad.
Why?
You know, string of terms around paddling and Mark Foley and what else we got today, Jim? We could definitely do something like that. Do you think any of these people, when they looked at it on the website, did anyone think that these teachers were being serious? I mean, did the teachers speak at the school board meeting and say, I felt kind of bad that now all my friends and family think that I'm addicted to drugs?
Why in God's name would the principal put it on the website?
You know, I think this is more evidence that our screening process for school principals, really the whole certification regime, is just not working. But what would the dispositions people say about this, Rick? All right. We'll have to ponder that again next week because that is all the time that we have.
Liam, that was choice.
Liam, well done. Jen, very nice. Didn't sound like Fran Drescher this week. Way to go. But thank you all for joining us. In the meantime, read the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.